All right, what is up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is the Good Morning Liberty Podcast live at Freedom Fest in South Dakota. My name is Nate Thurston. This is Charles Thompson. And to my right here is the one and only Larry Sharp from The Sharp Way. How you doing today?
I am doing amazing. Thank you for having me aboard. I appreciate it.
Larry, my first question is, you're from New York.
I am.
Right, you ran for governor.
Yep. AOC, by the way, is my congressperson. I accept your condolences.
I'm so sorry.
Yes, I accept your condolences.
That was my first question was going to be, why are you still there?
It's a great question, and I'll tell you, it's a serious answer. For those of you who know New York, the state itself is amazing. It's one of the most wonderful, diverse states you could possibly imagine. When I mean diverse, I mean really, if you like skiing and mountains and farmland, we got it. You like Broadway, you like classical music, you like baseball, football, you like beaches, you like mountains, whatever you like. New York has. Our state's amazing. Our government is garbage. That's our problem. Our government is a disaster. People don't leave New York because they don't like the weather or they don't like the farmland or the beautiful forests or the awesome mountains or the skiing. That's not what they leave New York. They leave New York because it's oppressive. And it's the government that does that.
And you're not one to run away.
Many do. We've lost almost 2 million in the last 10 years. In fact, we lost a congressperson last time. We'll lose at least one more in 10 years, maybe two. They are running away, and that's the problem. They're leaving like this or tomorrow. People ask me why I don't leave. I still have hope. I don't want to. I'm born and raised in my city. I don't want to leave my city. I want to fix my state. True story. I was going to leave. 2016, 2017, I'm like, I'm out of here. Gary Johnson doesn't do as well as I want him to do. I think we're in trouble. So I'm looking to leave. I head out down to North Carolina. And because before what I do for a living, I'm a business consultant, my day job, right? That's what I do. That's how I pay my bills, right? So I was going to go down to a big city, which in the South, the big cities is, of course, Charlotte. So I was considering moving outside of Charlotte. And it was so good there. Like, I could sell my home in Queens and buy a mansion, right? Mm-hmm. Pay less taxes, still have a big city to commute to and to do what I have to do. And I got angry. And I said to myself, I can leave or I try to fix something. I felt so angry. Why do I have to leave my state? Why do I have to leave where I'm born, where I'm raised, where I love my friends, my family? Why do I have to leave my business? Why do I have to leave that? So I got angry. So I said, I'm running for office. That's why I ran for governor. And I'm still here today because I still have some hope. When I pack up and leave, if that happens, if I do leave, you'll know, no hope.
That's what I love about places like this, because I also can find myself getting angry. I'm just like, yep. What are we doing this for? Like,
yes,
it's never going to work. Right. But then I come somewhere like here and I'm like, oh my God, look at all these people that are actually working
absolutely
towards a better future. And like, why am I not joining them? Why would I give up? You know?
So, absolutely.
So that kind of thing gives me hope. And what you do every day gives me hope.
Trying my best. Don't forget, de Blasio is my mayor. Cuomo is my governor. So whenever you think your life is bad politically, just think about me.
Yeah, exactly.
What I want to know is, so we're in Nashville, Tennessee, and a lot of people are moving from California and New York to come to Nashville right now.
I'm considering going to Chattanooga.
And why is
that's
it?
My city.
Chattanooga's great, by the way.
That's
amazing
mine.
City. I have a lot of family there.
I'm considering there.
Why is it that people leave these states or these cities and they don't understand why they actually left? They might think, well, because the housing price is too much or because they were locking me down, they were taking away my business. But then they come to Chattanooga,
mm-hmm.
and they bring the same policies with them sometimes. Why don't they make the connection?
I'm not sure that's 100% true. It depends on where they move, right? The difference is it's not actually state to state. It's city versus rural. So when city people move to other cities, they bring the same because they're city people, right? So if someone moves from, say, San Francisco to, say, Austin, yeah, they're bringing the same, right? They're just like, well, this time socialism will work, right? That's where. But if you move from outside rural area to rural area, you bring the same. Or even if you bring from city to rural. And I think there are so many bad things about the COVID lockdowns. There's, I think, one good thing. The COVID lockdowns made a lot of people who live in cities realize, I don't have to live in a city to make money. So now they're going outside of cities. And as they move into the outside of the cities, into more rural and suburban areas, they should, the pendulum should move more towards the right. It's been far left. It should move more towards the right. One of the major reasons why the country's been moving left is because of urbanization. Right? If you look after 2009, there's been almost no, you know, recovery except inside cities. And about 80% of all new jobs have come out of 20 American cities. So everyone's been rushing to cities. That's why New York City could still survive. It's a 16 million person metro area. Mm-hmm. The city itself is 8.5 million. There's more people in New York City than Tennessee, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, that's kind of how that works. But that's changing. The lockdowns made a lot of people leave, particularly wealthy people. there's a lot of wealthy people. People don't know this. 65,000 people in an 8.5 million person city pay 50% of the taxes.
Wow.
That's how much wealth we have in New York City.
Hmm.
You can imagine that, right?
It's impressive.
But those people now are leaving because they're saying, I don't have to stay there to make my money anymore. They've spent over a year and a half doing everything remotely, and it's been working. Everyone who's wealthy in New York City has at least two homes, right? They have one in New York City and then one in maybe Connecticut, or one in Florida, one in South Jersey, one upstate New York. So they've gone to go three or four homes. And Nashville, as you know, has been booming for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
They've been investing in those in things like hotels and resorts, all the wealthy have, for years. Now they're like, I should just move there. That's why they're going there. And they're now saying, I can just stay there. Now you might say, well, why does someone in New York City care? Because all the people who support them now also leave. The dry cleaners, the restaurants, the managers, the executive assistants, they all leave too, right? So the city's lost at least 500,000 workers. It will probably lose at least that, if not a million, in the coming years. New York City will go under 7 million, I believe, in the next 2 years or so, and never recover from that.
Wow.
As you're talking about people leaving, it makes me think about my family in Illinois. I mean, I know you've got a bad in New York, but my family in Illinois
pretty
also.
Bad too, though. Pretty
Illinois
bad, too.
Pretty bad.
They've got a bad, too. And then on top of that, they're a farm family, so I grew up on a farm. And they're stuck.
Yep.
And my dad has told me several times, I would love to go to Tennessee.
Yep.
I would love to go to Kentucky, but I can't pick up 2,500 acres and move it to Tennessee.
And yes, this is a problem we have in New York also, right?
Yeah.
And I'll touch two pieces of that. The first thing, what happens in most states like Illinois and New York is people stay until they can't or until something happens. Like, for example, an elderly parent passes away. And then they either get inheritance or now they're no longer connected to the land and they sell it, whatever, and they leave, right? Option one. Two, kids get out of school, right? Kids finish all their colleges. You know what? I'm out. They leave. Or three, they have a state job, and they retire and get a pension. And they take that pension that comes from a state like Illinois or New York, and they bring it to Florida, Tennessee, Texas, whatever. That's a common problem. But the way of getting around that, sadly, is two things. One, and I called this last year. I said that eventually New York City is going to get so bad that people are just going to pack up and walk away. They're going to leave their houses, just abandon them, not care about rent, not care about mortgages, and just leave. In the New York State .gov website now, there's a thing called zombie houses, because it's that common. People just leave.
Huh.
They just walk away. They don't care. They
not even sell it.
Nothing.
They just
pack up and walk. They can't sell it because they owe so much. So they're going to still owe if they're going to owe either way. They owe whether they sell it because they're underwater or they don't sell it. So they say, you know what? I'm going bankrupt anyway. You're not going to collect anything. So I'm out. They pack up, grab what they want, and they leave. You're never going to collect. That's why it's called zombie houses.
Wow.
Can you fix that? Yes. You can fix it. You can fix people in the poor communities, whether they're farmers, whether they're inner city, by supporting the entrepreneur. That is the key. And there are two or three ways you do that. Number one is what Wyoming did. You say, if you're a local farmer and you want to sell only locally, and you don't want to sell outside the state boundaries, you are immune from all federal regulatory bodies. New York State should copy that for every single business, period. If you are a business in New York State and you will not sell outside of New York State, just with a sign you agree, no federal regulatory bodies. The only caveat is you must be transparent. You must tell your customers not following regulation standards, federal standards, not following federal standards.
And that's because the Commerce Clause doesn't apply.
That is correct.
Yeah,
yes,
I'm only in the state.
That's correct. So you just do that, boom. What does that do? You go to any small town, most of the businesses there are franchises. Almost all the franchises. Well, they're across state. They have to follow all federal guidelines. It gives the small guy a chance. And if they ever want to get big and compete against the big guys, they can. But they know in advance what they're going to have to go through, and they can prep for it or never do it. That's one. But a second piece is change all licensing to credentialing. So allow the state to have credentials. An example I give all the time is in New York State, you need a license to braid hair.
We had that in Tennessee as well.
Yes.
They
finally
got rid of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys have been really good in Tennessee,
yes.
Right?
The Beacon Center there.
Yes, you guys are great.
Give them props.
Was it Tennessee for All, Fall Tennessee? What is that place?
I'm not sure.
That
anyway,
one I'm not sure of.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You can go to foralltn.org.
There we go.
But they're the ones doing so much work there, right? So that's what I want to do. It's okay if the government says, we believe that if you have these credentials, you are a valid hair braider or whatever the thing may be. But it shouldn't be mandatory. Again, just transparency. Don't follow state guidelines. If you want to go braid hair, braid hair. Doesn't matter.
Well, that means that the credential system might be saying that there is more value to someone that has the credentials, which is how we should do it anyway. We've
Bingo.
Talked a lot about a free market system where
yes.
Good Morning Liberty badge of approval on whatever
Correct.
It is. And we would be incentivized to put our badge on people who are going to do a good job. Because
100%.
If we do it for people who don't do a good job,
the
then why would our badge have any value for
Correct.
People at all?
And not just that, you would remove your badge from people who did bad jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so now someone doesn't want to mess up because now you're going to scold them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I can't mess up. These guys are going to burn me on live. I mean, I don't want to do that. They're going to burn me. I got to be quiet.
There's a clear incentive in the free market for us to do that because we would not want to put our name on something that was going to give someone bad service. The government does not have the incentive to do this.
But I would go one step further. If you look at the average person who doesn't like this idea, it's because they're worried about big business.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that these regulations actually don't hurt big business. They hurt small business. And the reason why is who writes the regulations? Corporate lobbyists.
The big business.
That's who writes it. So, and when does a regulation change? When a corporate lobbyist tells the government to change it. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a standard or a regulation or credentialing, it changes as the organizations change. Right? So now it moves along with things. It's one of the reasons why the EPA fails so often. Most of those regulations were written in the 80s. They're no longer valid anymore. Right? So many of these things happen. When you have multiple credentialing, all of a sudden things get better by default. Oh my God, competition makes things better? What? Yes, it does. I know, I thought it up myself. No one's ever said it before.
Yeah. That's a fringe idea.
It is.
Right?
It's
kind
crazy.
Of a conspiracy.
You're hearing it here first, folks. Radical ideas.
Yes, exactly right. But I think you see it already, right? If you ask anybody, do you like Monopoly? They will go, no, Monopoly's bad. Great. Government's Monopoly.
Yes.
So how about instead of just going, which scares people I know, abolish this. They get scared. Oh, my God. Okay, great, great, great. Don't abolish. No worries. We don't have to abolish. Calm down. Keep your shirt on. We're good. We'll keep it. It will exist, but it won't have any teeth. So it won't be a license, which will punish you if you do it. It'll be a credential, which your community, if your credential is valuable, will punish you if you don't get it. Your community will punish you if the credential is valuable because they won't go there. If the credential isn't valuable, two things will happen. The credential will get better or it will go away. Both are the right answer. In addition, there'll be other credentialing. So you can have two or three or four stamps because I got not just this stamp, but I got the Good Morning Liberty stamp too. That's how good I am.
And the Larry Sharp stamp.
And the Larry Sharp stamp. I got all the stamps, right? I have all the stamps.
Yeah.
So I'm that good. So if you do that, you have better
stuff. Well, you still see this inside of industries that are licensed, like dentists. They
do.
They get part of the fellowship and
100%.
All these different types of things because those, actually, people care about that. I've never seen anybody ask the doctor for their MPI number.
right.
But they do display their credentials.
100%.
Like, okay, I'm board certified in area, right? That's or I'm part of this fellowship or whatever.
Absolutely.
You're the elite crowd. So they still have credentialing inside of license. Just replace the licensing with that.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. We're also business consultants for our day jobs as well. And unfortunately, we're in the what probably some of the most heavily regulated markets there is, which is healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
And
don't worry, I'm in finance and law. It's
and
fine.
Collections.
Got you.
So finance, banking, and healthcare, two
yep.
of the... I can't figure out which one has more regulations. They're both hundreds of thousands of pages in like size 6 font.
Yep.
So I can't tell which one has more. But you know what I find so interesting in that space is like, I have a job. Like, I make really good money because of government regulation.
Yes.
Because if it wasn't for all of that regulation,
grifters. Yes.
They wouldn't need my expertise to try to navigate how to build the software to comply
Absolutely.
With all the freaking rules.
One of the things, and it's going to sound horrible, but I'm with you, right? One of the things I've done a lot of training is in minority and women-owned businesses in New York City. New York City pays a lot of money to train minority and women-owned businesses. It's a government program. And they hire people. They bring me on to do the training. I make money off of it.
Right.
I'm agreeing with you. Same thing,
yeah.
right? Same thing.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of small business owners. That's one of my key things. I work with like massive sovereign funds and small business owners.
Yeah.
I'm like there.
Right.
Yeah. I'm nowhere. I'm no middle.
I've got the spectrum.
I'm top and bottom only, no middle. But yeah, I agree with you, right? And the other thing I'll bring up here, if I could, all those regulations, again, big business still doing fine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I grew up in the South Bronx in New York City, in a poor neighborhood. And how did we get out of that neighborhood? My father and my mother, how did we get out of that neighborhood to the Long Island eventually? It was because we had small businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I was little, there was no Uber. I grew up in the 70s, 60s and 70s. There's no Uber, right? And cabs wouldn't come to my neighborhood. So we had gypsy cabs. One guy would paint one side of his door, one of his doors a different color, and we'd know. Like, it could be a blue car with a red door. Oh, gypsy cab. That's how we would know. So
I love the free market.
That's what we would do. Yeah. Because those guys would take us places because they were in our neighborhood. Like, it was the guy you knew across the street. That was the guy, right? I mean, so you knew it. So that's how you got around, right? Girls used to braid hair on the stoop out front. They would braid hair for like a dollar, right? They would do that kind of stuff, right? So people would do those things. My father was a DJ, right? My mom and I together, we used to, I mean, child labor, oh my God. But yes, me and my mom and I, we used to clean offices and houses, right? To make extra cash.
Yeah.
That's how we got out. But now you regulate that stuff out of existence. So now remember something, whenever you add government, you by default remove community. Right? That's how it works. It's a guarantee. You add government, you remove community. And we're finding out now in COVID, one of the harshest things is with the COVID lockdowns, and in my state, New York, obviously some of the worst, the communities have been controlled by government for so long, they've lost the institutional knowledge to support themselves. They don't have it anymore.
But I honestly think the pandemic has helped our movement because people have seen how absolutely insane it is.
That's the bright side. I agree.
And for instance, we interviewed the author for Tuttle Twins, and in the last year and a half alone, because of the pandemic, they've sold like over 2 million books.
Yeah,
they went from in 6 years sold 700,000, and in the last year and a half sold like 2 million. It's an amazing growth because people are like, oh my God, I don't need the government to tell me to lock down, or I can make money from home,
or I can teach my kids something.
I can teach my kids something
if I want to.
We can move out of the city and build a mansion right outside of another city.
I know.
And still have $1 million in the bank.
That's actually crazy. A freer city with nicer people
right,
in it.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know if you caught this real quick. Did you mentioned government being the only monopoly, which is true. Did you hear? And this is why I think people are coming around. Did you hear Elon Musk the other day talk about how people hate corporations, but government's the biggest corporation of all, which is, I've been saying that for years.
And then he said they're the biggest corporation and they have a monopoly on violence.
Elon Musk.
He's right.
Yeah.
Look, people get mad at Elon, and Elon and New York State have our issues because he grifted off of us a lot. Don't get me wrong, I'm going to be very forward. Elon has great things to say and, together, huge government grifter.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, but both things are true.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing I respect about him is he says, oh, this is grifting, but it's the system, so I'm taking it.
Right. So I'm just playing the game.
I'm playing the game.
Don't hate the player.
He's like, yes, hate the game. I agree. Yeah. So while I have some issues with what he's done, I do have some. I get it. Like, I'm not mad at him because of it. That makes any sense, right?
Anything,
I'm not mad at him.
This is one of the best government investments we've ever seen.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. So are you frustrated with the media? Are you tired of being fed the same news stories over and over again? One of the reasons we started this podcast is to give you a more well-rounded perspective on important issues.
That's very true.
That is true. So our partners at Ground News are working to do the same, and boy, they are. It's really cool, actually.
Yeah, Ground News, so just so you guys know, this is a really cool app. I've got it on my phone. I've been using it for getting show notes for the show. We found out about this a little bit ago, and I'm really excited that we get to tell you about it now. But it's an app that lets you compare how a single news story is being covered across the entire political spectrum. Okay, this is not just a news aggregator. It's a tool with tons of easy-to-use features that help you analyze the news so you can be confident you're getting the whole story. Unlike social media and other news apps, Ground News doesn't use your browsing history to manipulate your news feed. Their blind spot feature shows you stories that are underreported by both the left and the right. So it's this really cool app that we're going to ask you to go to through our link that when you look at a story, it shows you how much it's being covered by right-leaning news sites, how much it's being covered by left-leaning news sites. Is it being covered by both of them pretty equally? And it shows you what the bias is overall, so you know what kind of bias you're getting from each one of these news organizations. It's a really cool app.
And you can pick up keywords like rare.
Mm-hmm, rare.
All right, so if you're the kind of person who's open to seeing multiple perspectives on controversial issues, then Ground News is for you. Check out Ground News by visiting ground.news/GML. That's ground.news/GML, or click the link in the description to download the free app.
You know, one thing that I wish you mentioned earlier, that the regulations, the license, all of that, it doesn't hurt the big business.
Right.
So what I wish people on the left would realize is that big businesses love regulations.
100%.
It's an amazing tool for them. And
insurance companies wrote the healthcare law in 2012.
They think because they hate the big corporations that they're going to hurt them by passing these regulations, and they're not. They're helping them.
Correct. Absolutely. It's funny, if you look at the left and libertarians, if you combine those two, many times the outcomes we agree with, right? We want a good outcome. But the way we get there, oh my God, just totally night and day, right? Totally night and day. But if you ask someone, and when I spend a lot of time talking to the left. I live in New York City, you kind of have to, right? Mm-hmm. So I always focus on what outcome do you want, mm-hmm. right? So I've asked them, I said, look, we have a huge problem with our MTA in New York City, right? Biggest city in the country. At its peak, 4 million people a day used our subway. At its peak. That's not the case anymore since COVID lockdowns, but that's the peak. So how do we deal with that? And most people use the subway. Most of them are either middle class or working poor. That's the most common, right, who use the subway. Well, they go, I want business to pay. Okay, I agree. Let business pay. Okay, great. How about we lease naming rights to our bridges and allow, 3M or Kellogg or Pepsi mm-hmm. or whatever to have the name on the bridge? They'll pay us $100 million a year. Easy. What? They pay $20 million a year for a stadium that gets used on the weekends.
Right.
I'm talking about a bridge that gets mentioned hundreds of times every single day on traffic reports throughout a 16 million metro person area. Yeah.
Instead of naming it after the governor.
George Washington isn't paying for that bridge.
He's not paying a dime. Yeah. Not one dime, that deadbeat.
Who's this Holland guy, and yes. why do I care about his tunnel?
I don't. God, Holland. Get rid of that guy.
Yeah.
But yes, but imagine we can do that, and then all of a sudden now we take that money and we can now deal with the maintenance of the bridge and, of course, also pay for some of the subways, keep the prices down, and it's voluntary, right? Mm-hmm. Businesses would voluntarily give that money to us. They don't want it. They want to tax the rich. The problem that is there, here's the part where we agree. The left uses or thinks of taxes as punishment. So do we. So we do agree on that one, that we agree with. But what they want to do is only punish the rich because they're rich. I'm saying if you're going to punish people, punish us equally. If you're going to punish us, right? I'd rather you not punish us. But if you're going to punish us, punish us equally, and then create a system to where the wealthy happily give their money back to the system. It can be done.
But one, because the rich don't really pay taxes anyway.
That's correct.
I think one of the greatest
percentage they don't.
Right. And I think one of the greatest examples of this is they're not even hiding it anymore. For instance, when they add new taxes or new fees, let's say your airline ticket, the airlines actually spell it out for you.
Right.
Like they're not paying it. It's on your line. It's on the line item.
Yes.
This is the 9/11 fee.
Yep.
This is the extra government whatever fee.
Right, exactly.
They're literally spelling it out on the receipt for you.
Someone's gotta pay for those TSA people to harass you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You're
not free.
You're paying it.
That's correct. So
you're paying for someone to fill you up.
You have to get. Look, you're getting felt up. Pay for it.
Which might be
that's
prostitution.
What I'm saying, right?
It might be prostitution. I don't know.
It could be.
It's actually
government sponsored.
It's actually cheap for what you're getting.
That's true. That's right. Yeah. That's a good point.
How many times you fly?
What Charlie's saying is the corporations don't pay the taxes. Their customers pay the taxes.
Right.
So every time you raise taxes on corporations, they're not going to go from 8% profit margin down to 5% profit margin. They're going to go from 8% to 8%. And whatever it is they're paying in taxes, they're going to get out of their products.
100%.
Especially when the people, especially when their customers are being given free money all the time.
The marketing piece works because when you do the marketing piece on the bridges, these are companies that already dropped billions of dollars in marketing. Their marketing budget isn't going to increase or decrease. It's just going to shift.
Mm-hmm.
So the pricing doesn't go up. So nobody gets punished. You just get better marketing. That's all it is. That's why you're trying to... That's why you want someone who's in government who understands at least a little bit about business. They don't have to be some, CEO of a Fortune 500 company, but at least have a clue. It would be nice.
Yeah.
If they maybe, had a regular job at least once. And so many of our politicians are lifelong politicians.
Yep. Preferably a business owner, but maybe not one who has a bunch of hotels around all over. Maybe no more hotel owners because...
I don't want to attack all hotel owners because of one. Just let's just be nice.
It's got PTSD for that.
Yes.
No, I can't decide if we were better a couple of years ago or right now. I don't know which one is. I think I would have taken a couple of years ago, to tell you the truth. But I don't like either one of them.
I don't think either one was. Here's the thing. People keep telling me, well, Larry, don't you want to vote for this guy or that guy because of this or that? And I say no every time. No matter what, and I'm fanatical on this, and your audience may think I'm crazy, but I'm fanatical on this. Every single time you can vote third party, no matter what. Every single time, no matter what the consequence, no matter who was on the ballot. And I know it sounds crazy. Why do I say that? Because remember something. Obama got us Trump. Trump got us Biden.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes back and forth.
It's like the lesser of two evils keeps getting more evil.
Keep getting more evil. So then what does Biden get? What does Biden get? Does Biden get us Ted Cruz? Does Ted Cruz get us AOC? Right? Yeah. What happens if we keep moving? What happens, right, as we keep going down the road?
Or we could get Trump Jr.
We need a third party for two reasons. One, obviously, I hope they win. I'm a libertarian. I'm completely biased. Please vote libertarian. So, yes, totally biased. But even if you don't want to go that route, if you have a third party, it makes the other two have to move towards reality.
Creates competition.
Yes. Right now, it's very simple. I'm running as Democrat. Hey, everyone, I'm not a Republican. Oh, great. Vote for him. What's his policy? I don't know. It doesn't matter. Oh, I'm a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. Oh, he's not a Democrat. Vote for him. Biden's entire campaign was, I'm not Trump. That's his whole campaign.
Literally.
Mm-hmm. Right? What
about
foreign policy?
He didn't really come out.
Yeah, he didn't have to.
He didn't have to.
He didn't have to because all his surrogates said, that guy is so not Trump. He is so not Trump.
Yeah.
Oh, but what about foreign?
We don't know what he is, but he's not Trump.
What about his foreign policy? So not Trump. How about healthcare? Not Trump. Not him.
Yeah.
Trump? No. That's all the entire campaign was that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? So,
Isn't this just another old rich white guy? They're like,
but not
matter.
Trump.
It's not Trump.
Not Trump.
Not Trump.
Don't matter. Literally, the Democrats literally could have nominated a ham sandwich, and a ham sandwich would be our president right now.
That sounds delicious.
Yes, it would be better.
I love ham
sandwiches. I actually would have rather had the ham sandwich to be voted with you. I would have rather had the ham sandwich.
Yeah. You see how much it doesn't matter that, and we try to not make fun of it. Actually, I'm lying. We do make fun of it, but Biden is going. He's maybe a little bit of dementia going on right now. Okay, maybe.
Let's just say
we're not doctors. We can't diagnose.
Yeah, here's what I think everyone would agree with. He's not the man he used to be.
That is.
I think everyone would agree with that.
Do you remember the debate with Paul Ryan?
Oh, yeah.
He eviscerated him.
He was like, yeah, he was ready to go.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
And I remember watching that. And at that time, I was a big right wing guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kept thinking that if the Republicans were going to win, everyone was going to die, of course. And I watched that debate and I was just so sad afterwards because Biden just destroyed him that night. He walked all over him. And now that is not.
That's not
we're seeing.
That's not who he is. That's not who he is. That's true. It's not who he is.
So where do we go from here? I want to know what's next for you. What's next on the table? Are we going to see you as the governor?
I know some of the most important things from my run in 2018. I made a lot of impact. I learned a whole lot. I built a big team. I raised $500,000, which for a libertarian campaign is huge.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is a massive amount. Sadly, the Republican raised $4 million and the Democrat raised $12 million. But I was in the game at least, right? I was in the game.
You could still place a bet.
Yes, I could. Yes, I was there, right?
You weren't going to get blinded.
Was at the table.
I was at the table. I was. So I hope to do that again if I can. But there are two things I need. I need more support, which is one reason why I'm here, to get more support to make another run in 2022. And I want to make sure that people get behind me to where I can make more impact.
Are you still running for nothing? Governor.
Governor,
mayor,
yes.
State rep?
No. I'm not someone who runs to run. That is a terrible idea. Because when I run, I ask a lot of the people who support me. I ask a lot. I bug people for money. I bug them for time. They're my social media warriors. I do sign waves in the streets. I do all types of stuff. I'm not ready to ask people for that commitment unless I can give them some, if I could deliver something. Look, we're business guys.
Yeah.
We want to deliver value.
That's right.
I'm not going to run just go, see, I was on a ballot. It's a vanity run. I have a podcast with my name on it. I'm good. I have enough vanity. By the way, sharpway.com.
There we go.
So anyway, yes.
Yeah.
So yes, I have a podcast with my name on it. I don't need any more vanity. I'm good with that. But if we actually do, if I think I can make impact, I'll do it again. And that's my goal. I need to get enough cash and enough backing to make it happen, be more popular, and then I'll do it again.
So being in the party, being in the Libertarian Party, and an advocate for the Libertarian Party, I know you are. I am not.
Mm-hmm.
I've considered myself Libertarian, but I have a difficult time with the... I guess some of the things in the Libertarian Party, so
me
I'm not
too.
There yet.
I'm with you on that.
I do agree we need a third party.
Yes.
But help me out here because Nate and I have this idea, and it's because we look at the news every single day. For instance, you know, San Francisco is spending $65,000 per tent in their tent city. And,
is that all?
And all these things.
It's rookie numbers for New York. Come on now.
Yeah, okay.
We put our homeless up, I'm not joking, in five-star hotels.
Nice.
In the Upper West Side.
So if you're having issues, there you go.
If you're homeless, New York City, not a bad place.
But we have this idea where, you know, I feel like a lot of the LP focuses on national because that's fun, right? To run for president or whatever. And you're running state, you know, for governor, which I think is great.
Nice.
But we have this idea that we can affect so much change at the local level. For instance, if somebody was on the city council.
I'm going to jump already on that. I'm with you 100%.
Okay.
I do a live show almost every week called Libertarian Drinking Coffee Live. where I only focus on local candidates and I give them a platform, I raise money for them, 100%, you are totally correct. The value of a top-of-the-ticket run is not the victory. Of course I want a victory. Of course I want to run to win. But the value of that is the press. And I proved that in 2018. In 2018, I lost. But when I was done, the entire state knew who I was. The year after, I actually traveled the state again. I got 103 Libertarian victories locally because the press knew me. So when I went out there, the press came because the gubernatorial candidate is showing up. But then what do? I promote the local guy. Here's the thing to remember. Local has the best chance of victory, but the least chance of press. Top of the ticket, best chance of press, least chance of victory.
Gotcha.
So if the guy at the top or gal at the top is able to get that press, get out there, be known, and then transfer it to the local, local wins. Because then local gets best chance of victory plus the press.
And you can affect so much change at
yes.
the local level. We have a guy,
yes.
I always tell this story, we have a guy in Carthage, Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
and he got on the city council there, and he like started live streaming their budget meetings
yep.
on Facebook. And I'm like, this is like all we need is just some transparency,
100%.
And these people will out themselves.
Yes.
And it's amazing how much corruption can happen on a local level. I think they were, now this is rookie numbers again, but this is a small town in Tennessee. They were spending like $60,000 a year on sausage biscuits from a gas station.
Wow.
And so it's like,
I'm sure that gas station owner was somebody's friend.
It had to be.
Guaranteed.
Of course.
To be fair, they were really good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's yeah. I like
the
that.
The best
yeah.
sausage biscuits in Carthage.
Yeah. I love that. That's good. No. So. Look, our police budget in New York City is $6 billion.
That's more than the
yes,
state
so
revenue,
have,
I think, in Tennessee.
We have 40,000 police officers.
I think that's the state revenue in Tennessee.
Yeah.
$6 billion.
Probably,
that's the
yes,
budget.
It's $6 billion,
the whole
yes.
state. Yeah.
Our education budget in New York State, $60 billion.
Wow.
The New York State budget, only 20 countries in California is higher.
Wow.
$212 billion is our state budget.
That's insane.
It is insane.
Wow.
And we're losing people.
And you have pensions out
well,
the
because
wazoo.
You're not spending enough money.
That's the reason.
Yeah,
if we would
exactly.
only spend more money,
yeah.
then it would work. That's it. Yes.
See, we solved the problem.
Yes,
there we
exactly.
go. Larry, thank
yes.
you so much
of course.
For your time today.
We had a pleasure.
Good seeing
pleasure
you.
Talking
yes.
to
amazing
you.
Amazing talk.
All right, take care.
Thanks, guys.